This counterfactual conditional advances a consideration against the prescriptive statement presented earlier. As a critical thinker, you will encounter arguments involving categorical statements, conditional statements, prescriptive statements, predictive statements, and counterfactual conditional statements. Sentential logic's rules of inference will help you put them in order. Rules of inference. Although there are unlimited ways to make good arguments using different kinds of statements, six main patterns appear repeatedly. It pays to learn these patterns so that you can recognize them when you see them and use them in making arguments of your own. Hypothetical syllogism. The rule of inference known as hypothetical syllogism is a straightforward application of the same transitive reasoning we have seen before. Recall that the following is the simplest example of transitivity. 1. X is Y. 2. Y is Z. 3. Therefore X is Z. The variable Y is the bridge between X and Z. If X is Y and Y is Z, then X must be Z. This is a deductively valid standard form of argument. Suppose you are a detective trying to solve the murder of Cassandra Thomas, the owner of a grocery store in Gamerton, who was shot dead on the night of July 10. You have two suspects, Vincent Cockley and Mark Deal. You interview a teenager named Dawn Rummy, who swears she saw Mark do it. You therefore reason as follows. 1. If Dawn is telling the truth, then Mark is the killer. 2. If Mark is the killer, then Vincent is innocent. 3. Therefore, if Dawn is telling the truth, then Vincent is innocent. This is a hypothetical syllogism. It is transitive reasoning because the premises form a sequence such that the middle member of the sequence makes a bridge from the first member to the last. The difference between hypothetical syllogisms and the categorical syllogisms we studied in the last chapter is that the members of the sequence in hypothetical syllogisms are whole statements rather than just subject and predicate terms as they are in categorical syllogisms. We can symbolize our hypothetical syllogism about the murder of Cassandra Thomas as follows. Let A equal Dawn, let B equal telling the truth, let C equal Mark. Let D equal the killer, let E equal Vincent, let F equal innocent. 1. If A is B, then C is D. 2. If C is D, then E is F. 3. Therefore, if A is B, then E is F. The statement C is D acts as a bridge linking the statement A is B with the statement E is F. Since whole statements rather than subjects and predicates are treated as the primary units in sentential logic, logicians often use single capital letters to represent them. In fact, they have designated the capital letters P, Q, R, and S to serve as the standard symbols for sentential units. Hence, the standard symbolic representation of the hypothetical syllogism is as follows. 1. If P, then Q. 2. If Q, then R. 3. Therefore, if P, then R. Just remember, you must plug a whole statement into each variable, and you must use the same statement for the same variable. You can use any statement you want, categorical, prescriptive, predictive, counterfactual. The results will be valid as long as you follow the pattern exactly. Hypothetical syllogism is a good rule of inference to use in cases where the conclusion depends on an unknown factor. In our example above, we were not able to conclude that Vincent is innocent, but only that if Dawn is telling the truth, then he is innocent. Hypothetical syllogism is called hypothetical because it leaves you with a big if in the conclusion. Modus ponens. The rule of inference known as modus ponens is like hypothetical syllogism, except it allows you to eliminate the if and come to a definite conclusion. Suppose Dawn passes a lie detector test when she testifies that she saw Mark shoot Cassandra. You may now modify your original reasoning as follows. 1. If Dawn is telling the truth, then Vincent is innocent. 2. Dawn is telling the truth because she passed the lie detector test. 3. Therefore, Vincent is innocent. Now you have a definite conclusion, no ifs about it. Recall that every conditional statement has two components. The if part is called the antecedent, while the then part is called the consequent. Modus ponens works by asserting a conditional statement in the first premise and then proceeding to affirm its antecedent in the second premise. This entitles you to infer the truth of the consequent in the conclusion. In fact, the name modus ponens is Latin shorthand for the method of affirming the antecedent. The symbolic representation for modus ponens is as follows. 1. If P, then Q. 2. P. 3. Therefore Q. This pattern of reasoning is always valid. Although the conditional statement usually comes in the first premise and the affirmation of its antecedent in the second, you can switch the order of the premises and it won't make any difference. The fallacy of affirming the consequent. While switching the order of the premises in a modus ponens argument doesn't make any difference, switching the order of the variables, P and Q, makes a huge difference. Modus ponens has an evil twin called the fallacy of affirming the consequent. It comes from switching the order of the P's and Q's, and it instantly destroys the argument. Because this fallacy looks a lot like modus ponens, it is easy to make the mistake of thinking it is valid. But it isn't, and it is absolutely crucial that you understand why. Suppose Dawn declines to take the lie detector test, leaving you unable to confirm what she said about seeing Mark shoot Cassandra. So instead, you check out Vincent's alibi. He claims he was at the pub next door paying for his supper when the gun went off. After hearing Vincent's story, you check with the waitress at the pub, and sure enough, she confirms that Vincent was paying for his supper when they both heard the shot. Upon gaining this information, you may be tempted to modify your original reasoning as follows. 1. If Dawn is telling the truth about seeing Mark shoot Cassandra, then Vincent is innocent. 2. Vincent is innocent because he was with the waitress when the shot went off. 3. Therefore, Dawn is telling the truth about seeing Mark shoot Cassandra. Although this reasoning may seem right, it isn't. Its structure can be symbolized as follows. 1. If P, then Q. 2. Q. 3. Therefore P. It is called the fallacy of affirming the consequent because the variables have been switched. Step 2 affirms the consequent of the conditional in step 1, Q, instead of affirming its antecedent, P. If you stop to think about it, you can see why the argument is invalid. Just because the shooter couldn't have been Vincent doesn't mean it was Mark. Perhaps Dawn hates Mark and lied about seeing him pull the trigger. Or perhaps she mistook someone else for him. The bottom line is that while proving Mark did it would get Vincent off the hook, the reverse is not true. Proving Vincent didn't do it does not guarantee Mark did. As a critical thinker, you must resist the temptation to commit the fallacy of affirming the consequent at all costs. There is, however, a valid way of reversing a modus ponens argument. It is called modus tollens. Modus tollens. The rule of inference known as modus tollens allows you to deny the consequent of a conditional statement and thereby conclude that its antecedent is not true. We can illustrate this point by extending our story. Now that Vincent is off the hook, you need to find out whether or not it was Mark. So you check out his alibi. He claims to have been at a hotel in Moscow when the murder occurred. So you go to Moscow with a picture of Mark and ask the clerks at the hotel whether they can confirm that he was there the afternoon of July 10. One clerk confirms that he stopped by the front desk for a newspaper at noon that day. Taking account of the distance between Moscow and Gamertin, you calculate that it would have been physically impossible for Mark to make the trip in time to kill Cassandra. Hence, you may now modify your original reasoning as follows. 1. If Dawn is telling the truth, then Mark is the killer. 2. But Mark is not the killer because he was in Moscow. 3. Therefore, Dawn is not telling the truth. This is modus tollens. Its name is Latin shorthand for the method of denying the consequent. You can see why. The first step asserts a conditional, the second step denies its consequent, the conclusion infers the denial of its antecedent. The symbolic representation for modus tollens is as follows. 1. If P, then Q. 2. Not Q. 3. Therefore not P. This pattern of reasoning is always valid. Although the conditional statement usually comes first and the denial of the consequent second, you can switch the order of the premises and it won't make any difference. The fallacy of denying the antecedent. Unfortunately, modus tollens has an evil twin as well. It's called the fallacy of denying the antecedent. It comes from switching the order of the variables P and Q, and it instantly destroys the validity of the argument. Suppose you are unable to go to Moscow to check out Mark's alibi. So instead, you decide to investigate Dawn's story. She claims she stopped by Cassandra's shop to buy cigarettes on her way home from school. She was in the bathroom when she heard shouting. As she came out, she saw Mark pull a gun from his coat and shoot Cassandra point blank. Although Dawn seems sincere, you learn from several of her fellow students that she was actually at a football game after school that day. You may be tempted to modify your original reasoning as follows. If Dawn is telling the truth, then Mark is the killer. 2. But Dawn is not telling the truth because she was at a football game. 3. Therefore, Mark is not the killer. While this reasoning may look right at first glance, it isn't. Its structure can be symbolized as follows. 1. If P, then Q. 2. Not P. 3. Therefore not Q. It is called the fallacy of denying the antecedent because the variables have been switched. Step 2 denies the antecedent of the conditional in step 1, P, instead of denying its consequent, Q. On close inspection, you can see why the argument is invalid. Just because Dawn isn't telling the truth doesn't mean Mark is not the killer. Perhaps Dawn somehow knew Mark did it, even though she wasn't really there to witness it. The bottom line is that if we were able to confirm that Dawn was telling the truth, then Mark would be busted. But the reverse is not true. Disproving what Dawn said does not exonerate him. As with the fallacy of affirming the consequent, critical thinkers must avoid committing the fallacy of denying the antecedent at all costs. One thing that makes it difficult to distinguish the two modus rules from their corresponding fallacies is that the antecedent and/or the consequent of the conditional may already be negative. Suppose we were to start a standard form with the following conditional statement. 1. If Dawn was not at the shop, then she did not witness the shooting. 2. Blank. 3. Therefore. How would you fill in step 2 and step 3 in order to make the argument modus ponens? The answer is that you would have to affirm the antecedent in order to conclude that the consequent is true. But notice that since the antecedent happens to be negative, affirming the antecedent will mean inserting a negative statement in step 2 and likewise for step 3. 1. If Dawn was not at the shop, then she did not witness the shooting. 2. Dawn was not at the shop. 3. Therefore, Dawn did not witness the shooting. At a glance, this argument may look like the fallacy of denying the antecedent because premise 2 is negative. But it actually is a perfect instance of modus ponens. Modus ponens does not require that step 2 be positive, but rather that it affirm the antecedent of the conditional statement in step 1, whether that antecedent be positive or negative. The same point applies to modus tollens. Go back to our unfinished standard form, starting with the following conditional statement. 1. If Dawn was not at the shop, then she did not witness the shooting. 2. Blank. 3. Therefore. How would you fill in step 2 and step 3 in order to make the argument modus tollens?